Happy Tuesday, sports fans. It's a best-of edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. It is the Fan Golf Classic happening, as it always does every year, down at Langdon Farms on this beautiful Tuesday. It's going to be a hot one, so make sure if you are on the course today, everybody does love to enjoy a couple of cold ones, maybe a transfusion or two, but bring the water. If you're out there golfing with our personalities down at Langdon Farms. And we, because of that, have a best of edition of Dirt and Sprague and the rest of our shows here on the Fan Sports Network. A hell of a day for it to happen. It just kind of works out this way, you know, not really able to plan when news happens. But last night, Giannis Antetokounmpo officially on the move from the Milwaukee Bucks to not the Boston Celtics, not the Portland Trailblazers, but the Miami Heat. It is a one-for-one deal as far as teams goes. No facilitator, so the Blazers not involved in that. So we're going to get into a little bit of why I think the Blazers are going to be benefiting here in the last hour of the show. We'll just spend a couple of minutes on, you know, how much more value their draft picks have come the next three seasons. I think that's going to help them a ton. Great article by Sports Illustrated pointing that out. But in this best of edition, a lot of great content to get to for Dirt and Sprague. And speaking of the Blazers, we have the Oregonians' Bill Orem, a nice segment that they did with him back on May 29th. Let's hear what they had to say to Bill Orem here on a best of edition of Dirt and Sprague here on the Fan Sports Network.
Bill, good morning. How has life been for you, Mr. Travel Around the World?
I've been doing really, really well. I've got some hot coffee here in front of me. I think the sun's going to peek out here a little bit later. Good weekend ahead. Baseball, basketball,
yeah.
Sports.
Okay. Nice coffee. Just going to keep not rescheduling our coffee date, or what are we doing there? It's a little awkward here.
Well, we schedule coffee, and then you say insulting things, and so then I have to take a break from you for a while.
Hold on. No, a challenge flag. What did I say that could possibly be insulting? I did not name you, by the way. Of the two people on the show, my co-host is out. I am not the one that named you Mr. Move the Team. My co-host did that because you keep telling us that we're losing our team and you're scaring the living hell out of people.
Well, maybe eventually having the living hell scared out of you will move people to understand what is actually happening rather than burying their heads in the sand about it. But, I mean, that's up to you. I mean, if I have to be Mr. Move the Team and I have to be the boogeyman or the bad guy on this, so be it. But I'm not going to sit on credible information of what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I have a job to do.
I think it's very interesting, that situation between the city council, because we know they're going to get the funding in one end. And I read your Q&A with Dundon, which was really good. And here's where I sit with it, is like, he is just in no way indicated, even like in a weird answer way, that relocation is a possibility. I don't even think he's panicked about it. I think he feels he's going to get the funding, so it's not really much of a story for him. And I understand your side of it, what you're saying with certain city council members. You've gotten into it. They've called you out. But ultimately, like, the pressure and the real movers and shakers in the state, they're going to make them give the money. Like, I don't know if I'm in the camp of, like, worried about it.
Okay.
Oh, that's it? You are? You're still worried about it?
Why would I have spent the last 4 months of my life, Brandon? Like, why would I be using my platform and my voice and my spending time on my career and using my credibility to say that this is a real concern if it was BS? Like, why would I do that?
Well, I don't think,
like,
you would BS.
You,
I think you're reporting what you're hearing.
Like, who do you think I am? There is genuine fear at the top of every pillar of government, the state, the city, the county, that this deal could not get done. And then the question is, if the deal doesn't get done, what is the consequence of that? Those are the only two questions. Is the deal going to get done? And if it doesn't, what happens? Is the deal going to get done? I do not know. I don't have the same confidence you do. Because I've talked to so many people about this, and there's absolutely no person in who actually has any influence or power who expresses the same level of casual confidence that you just did. Not one person in the city of Portland or state of Oregon who operates in City Hall, Multnomah County, or the state of Oregon. It doesn't exist because the votes aren't there right now. And that doesn't mean that they won't come. Mm-hmm. They could, but they're not there right now. And you have a really tight timeline where this needs to happen in the next couple of months, or a lot of things start happening where you don't get the funding in time to do renovations for next summer. So the timeline is blown. You already have Tom Dundon having been rejected by the city of Portland once, and a clear path for him to say, we tried, they didn't want us, now we have to see what else is out there. Like, that is the path that I see happening. The fact that Tom Dundon hasn't directly threatened relocation is so what? Like, by the time that he says something that threatens relocation, it's too late. You don't think he said anything that nodded or winked at it? How about when he said in the Q&A that you read, mm-hmm. when he was asked if he, when I asked him about city councilors, you know, wanting to make changes on what he views as a done deal, and he said, well, if they want to make changes, we're going to have to take a step back and look at the whole thing. Like, what does that indicate to you? That's not like just like, oh, we'll take a look at what they say and like we'll consider it. No, it's like if you want to ask for more from us in this arrangement, you know, we have to consider the whole thing and what we're actually doing here is what he's saying. And that concerns me. That should be scary. Because as soon as he takes a step back and starts looking at you know, whether or not the deal is one that he likes in total at all, there's a much better chance of it falling through. And if this deal falls through, then everything is on the table.
So I guess the follow-up to that is somebody that read the Q&A. I read that quote, and I guess my interpretation, and maybe this comes from a reader's standpoint of how I feel, and I'm already projecting my emotion into the response. I didn't read it in the same tenor that you just walked it through there, because I think the tough part is if I myself personally am not concerned or not there yet, I'm reading that as like a negotiator who's hearing, oh, okay, we have to renegotiate, and like I'm not there, I'm not talking to him. Are you getting any sense, like, what is he like when he's talking about this? Is he calm? Is he measured? Are you getting a sense of like a little FU energy? Because I think that's the tough part from my perspective. Is I read it and I'm like, oh, okay. But I'm not the one that's talking in front of him or on the phone or whatever it was. And so I'm more kind of curious from your point of view, when you've talked to him about this, how it kind of feels from his end when he's answering some of these questions.
Well, I think there's a frustration. I think there's a frustration on the part of, you know, everybody on his side of the deal. I think there was an expectation, you know, from the Blazers and what this new ownership group was expecting when they bought the team, that this was going to be more or less a buttoned up arrangement by the time the team was bought, or by the time the deal closed in March. The state obviously took care of its piece, and that is the big piece of the $600 million package. Mm-hmm. The $365 million that the state procured. The city and county are on the hook for the other $200+ million. And so I think the expectation was that once the state took care of its piece, the city and the county were going to be shortly behind. So the fact that this is still being discussed in the terms that it's being discussed, I think is really frustrating and causing some alarm within ownership and within, you know, the people who've been negotiating on behalf of the Trailblazers.
Gotcha.
I think, you know, the way that they view this is the city council obviously has, you know, a say in this. I mean, that's the way local government is designed. But the way that this arena deal was sort of constructed was the mayor's office, the governor's office, the county commission, and the Blazers came together and said, this is a deal that everybody can get behind. But then, of course, that needs to, you know, the governor had to essentially take that to the legislature. The mayor has to take that to the city council, and the county commission president has to take it to the county commission. Everybody has to kind of take care of their own house in that sense. Mm-hmm. And the city and the county are both a little up in the air right now, but the city is kind of where the focus is at the moment. But I think the city council is looking at this as though this is the very beginning of the process. And this is something that has been discussed by the Blazers with the mayor's office, with the city, since before Keith Wilson was mayor in a former charter. So like, this has been something that has been hammered out over a significant amount of time and gotten to this point now where the city council should scrutinize the deal and should have questions and should look at it closely. But the framework more or less is the framework. And so there are questions to be had about, you know, the actual details of the lease, but the first step is, how are you going to pay for this arena if a lease is negotiated? And that is the piece that you know, I think people are getting hung up on now. And I guess for me, you know, the way I look at this, like, I think the Blazers and Moda Center are a huge community asset. I think Moda Center needs to be a, you know, a modern building that attracts events, whether the Blazers are here or not. So you might as well take care of it while the Blazers are here. But I think even, you know, even beyond that, it just is, you know, this is a $600 million project. The building is owned by the city. And, you know, once this whole thing is completed, the state will have an ownership piece as well. The city is not being asked to carry the load here. The city is being asked to pay, you know, a less than a third of the upfront renovation cost, even though the city is the one that owns the building. I think the city's, I know that this is not going to be a popular opinion with certain people, but I think the city is actually getting a good deal here. Most of the arena renovation is being paid by the income taxes of players, in terms of the state bonding, and then a lot of the city funding is taxed from the sale of the Blazers, and it's the fees on tickets that are collected on Blazer tickets. And for years and years and years, those fees have gone to fund other things in Portland. They have funded the renovation of Providence Park. They've funded renovation of other city-owned facilities. And what the construction of the deal as agreed to, or at least as proposed, is that those dollars that have been essentially made for the city on the backs of Moda Center and the Trailblazers for 30 years instead now go back into the Moda Center. For years, they've been funding other projects around town. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound like, I'm doing work for the Trailblazers here, but the reality is that, you know, the Moda Center was privately owned for 30 years. You know, Paul Allen paid for the maintenance, the operations, the ongoing cost of the building. The city paid like $40 million of the original cost of the building. That was for some parking. Otherwise, it was privately paid for and privately financed by Paul Allen and privately maintained for those 30 years. So the city got a extremely good deal for the first 30 years because they didn't have to pay for it. And now when this was sort of the way it was arranged in the original decision to sell the building back to the city for a dollar, like, the city didn't get hoodwinked on that. The city knew what it was doing, and the mindset around the city at the time was sort of, it's our turn. It's our turn to take over the cost and operation of this building. So that was sort of the aspiration of this in the first place. And that's where we are now, where it's like, if it's your turn, then this is how you do it.
Hey, Bill, it's Swag. I'm curious, the Women's Final Four is coming in 2030, and I know part of that deal, there were some upgrades that had to be made separate from the Blazers. Is that being taken care of by what is in this proposal? Or if the thing falls apart completely, what is the city or state still on the hook for in terms of improvements for that 2030 Final Four?
Yeah, it's such a great question, Swag. Thanks for bringing that up. So my understanding is that the 2030 Final Four was not awarded on the condition of an upgraded Moda Center. It wasn't a requirement, but an upgraded Moda Center was part of the pitch that Sport Oregon and, you know, the Trailblazers made when they, you know, Rip City Management, I guess I should say, made when they bid on the 2030 Final Four. And, you know, that event corresponds with the timeline of the renovations. If they were to do the renovations over the three summers as proposed, the building would be done in the summer of 2029, and the 2030 Women's Final Four would be sort of this event, this showcase event for Portland, this global event for a renovated Moda Center, but to put the city on display. And I think the idea was, you know, Portland's back. And so if you don't renovate Moda Center and the Blazers aren't here, let's say, right, doomsday scenario, you still have the Women's Final Four, but what you lose is the juice of a sort of, you know, being able to show, put your best foot forward as a city and as a venue. So, like, yeah, you still have the Women's Final Four in 2030, but are you going to get other events? Are you going to get a WNBA All-Star game? Are you going to get an NBA All-Star game? Certainly not if the Blazers are here. But I think that, you know, that the design of this was for that event that you're talking about to be sort of the on-ramp to more great things for Portland. And I think that if Portland falls short of being able to deliver on that, it becomes much more of a standalone event that doesn't have that same, you know, ex- accelerating force for the city and through sports and events.
Bill Orme, our guest here, OregonLive.com is where you can find all his good work. He's getting ready. We got a Eugene Regional. We got local teams attached to this one, which is very unique and in its own right. I want to ask you about that. One more. I read the piece on how the Hurricanes fans feel about Tom Dunn and how completely opposite it feels. We've noted as a show, like, some of the stuff and the narrative-based stuff with him being cheap, it ain't great optics, but, like, we haven't overreacted on our show because I don't really have a lot to overreact to. I didn't really care about the T-shirt thing. We've seen staff cuts with new ownership groups before. I know that's a sensitive subject for some, but I haven't seen a whole lot, and we should allow a guy a little more time than to be jumping down his neck. We haven't even had a coach hire yet. What, I guess, of the stuff, and you had a really good piece on it, but, like, what just surprises you the most of being in a city who feels one way about Dunnan versus the ecosystem you are in here locally and how he's been written and talked about?
Yeah, I think that what was most striking was the lack of focus on ownership. You know, like, I mean, certainly people are aware of him and his reputation, but like they're excited about the team on the ice. They're excited about, you know, they believe in the coach. They believe in the GM. You know, they love the product. And so everything starts with, we have a great hockey team, and this is the guy who made sure that we have a great hockey team. You know, they don't care that the business operations of the Hurricanes is significantly smaller than most NHL teams and certainly NBA teams. You know, there's an awareness, but not a focus. And I think that, you know, that's the misfortune of the situation here, is that, you know, Dunnan came in and those changes immediately became such a focus before, you know, there's any chance for him to, like you said, do anything, right? Like, there hasn't been a single decision on the basketball side yet that you know, impacts the future of this roster. And if the Blazers do somehow become a, you know, make the playoffs eight times in a row, and they go to the Western Conference Finals 3 times in 4 years, like, people are going to be pretty excited about the team, and they're going to be a lot less concerned. But I do think that there is a, you know, and I've said this elsewhere, I think, you know, that this is a really challenging fit culturally. You have a really, hard-nosed, sort of presents as unempathetic, you know, Texan billionaire who made his money, you know, the ways he made his money. And then you're in Portland with, like, you know, with, you know, feelings, for lack of a better term. Like, it's a really clunky fit. It's not a match you would draw between city and team owner. And I think there's gonna be some real growing pains there, and there have been. You know, Raleigh, a little bit better fit. I mean, it's a really business friendly climate.
Yep.
You know, it was a lot easier for him to get a deal done. I'm gonna have another piece on that. You know, I think he certainly has made his enemies along the way, but ultimately, I think that he's been seen as a really positive addition to the landscape in Raleigh, and we're just not there yet.
Final one for you, man, because we appreciate the time. I know it's a busy day. It's Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark Mania weekend in the WNBA locally. We've got the Eugene Regional about to first pitch in about a little less than 4 hours. We talked with Mike Parker earlier about that one. I'm just kind of curious. We had a Game 7 Saturday. I know it's not a local team, but it's still a Game 7. Just how you balance all the sports on our plate locally and then even from a national perspective.
Well, you left out the most important thing, which is is the Wells Guardians 3-4 lacrosse tournament this weekend.
Oh, that's my mistake.
That takes precedent in my life, too.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a lot, but it's a good problem to have. I'm going to make my way down to Eugene on the back end of the weekend, assuming this goes the way that I think we assume it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to miss Caitlin Clark at Moda Center tomorrow night. So, you know, but also try to mix in some lacrosse, keep an eye on Game 7. You know, really curious to see if the Spurs are able to pull it off. You know, I think that most people assume that the Thunder sneak through, but, you know, having seen the Spurs up close against the Blazers and just feel like Wemby has just gotten stronger and stronger and stronger as the postseason has gone on. I think that Spurs team is an absolute juggernaut. You know, I tweeted this last night, but I think that Dylan Harper is going to be a 10-time All-Star. And I just think that team is, if they're not in the finals this year, it's not going to be long. So, I think we're kind of at, you know, a pretty exciting inflection point in the history of basketball, frankly. But it's going to be a really busy sports weekend, and I'm excited for it. Something to talk about, frankly, Brandon, other than Tom Dundon, which is welcome, because that has been obviously a dominant topic. And listen, it is an important topic, and you and I can disagree about what the eventual impact is. Mm-hmm. But this is a really important moment for Portland, and how Portland handles this, and how Portland decides to move forward with the arena is going to say a lot about the city and our aspiration as a city and our ability to deliver in big moments.
I think that's where we would agree, no matter what your stance is. And you're far more sourced in reporting it than I. I just given you a thought as a longtime guy who's heard it before. Like, I'm not quite there. But we would agree on this is a big moment for the city. They need to get their head out of their ass. They need to be kind of locked in and focused on how to make this whole relationship really good. So we would agree there. One of my best friends, my wife would probably categorize it as, how are you guys friends? It feels like you talk by arguing. And I would say that's largely right, but we do it from a loving perspective. And I think we are kind of forming a relationship where I'm an annoyance to you, but like for some reason, we still get along really well.
Okay.
There we go. He's great. OregonLive.com. Bill Oram, former co-host of the radio program. I don't know if it'll ever happen again, but it was great to talk with him. Go find his great work, OregonLive.com. Enjoy the lacrosse tournament, the Eugene Regional, the Caitlin Clark Mania. Thanks for hopping on with us. We look for more of the great work at OregonLive.com.
I look forward to couples therapy with you later this afternoon, Brandon.
Absolutely. It'll be delightful.
All right. There you have it. The Oregonian's Bill Oram has been the... basically the main voice locally for any kind of worry or possibility that the Portland Trailblazers, after the sale to new owner Tom Dundon, could be moved. I've been in the camp, kind of like Sprague, that, and Dirt as well, honestly, that there's really not much of a chance. I mean, you go listen to, I think Steve Ballmer has kind of been making the rounds recently, talking about current Clippers owner, of course, back when he bought the Clippers. This was a while ago now, talking about wanting to move a team. This is how he approached Adam Silver initially. Like, I want to buy a team and move it to Seattle in the NBA. And at that point, years ago, Commish Silver said, hey, we don't really move teams anymore. So I understand that there is legitimate fear about a deal not quite being done, and the city still needing to step up, the state still needing to step up, but I don't think it will ultimately end with Portland leaving. I just don't think the NBA will allow it to happen. I don't think Adam Silver will have that egg on his face again. I wasn't in the meeting. I wish I were a fly on the wall, but if I had to bet the house that I don't own... In that meeting, when they were talking about the purchase, Tom Dundon with NBA executives, along with Commissioner Adam Silver, there had to have been a mention about, hey, if you come in and you buy the Portland Trailblazers, it's the Portland Trailblazers. It's not going to be the Las Vegas whatevers. We're not going to, you know, move you to some other Nashville whatevers. No, it's going to be the Portland Trailblazers. So I just overall don't really have much of a fear that that's going to happen. They won't be moved. I really think they're going to stay here, and the money will end up being given as it needs by the city and the state. All right, we got to get out to a break. More of this Best of Edition of Dirt and Sprague coming up. Of course, it is the Fan Golf Classic happening right now down at Langdon Farms. No Blazers news right now to report. They have not hired a head coach. They have not made a trade on the day of the NBA draft. If they do, we'll bring Dirt and Sprague live from Langdon Farms in to talk about it. But we'll get out to break and another Best of segment with them talking soccer and how the USA has kind of jumped on the bandwagon during the World Cup. That's coming up next on a Best of Edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Tulsi sitting with you for this Best of Edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan. It is the Fan Golf Classic happening right now down at Langdon Farms. A heck of a day for it to be going on. We don't plan this. We didn't think that Giannis was going to get traded last night, but that is what happened. Giannis Antetokounmpo officially on the move to the Miami Heat, and not a Portland Trailblazer, nor will the Blazers be a facilitator in that deal. Do have the return on it. It's quite a bit. We'll go over it once again really quickly. Just so many picks at this point. Of course, you heard in my update the players that they'll be getting: Jaime Jaquez Jr., Tyler Hero, Kasperis Jakaciones. It actually reported from multiple sources that that was kind of the hang-up on Miami's end, that Milwaukee was saying that Kasperis was a must have in this deal. Miami kept balking, eventually included him. I think offered Davion Mitchell at first, but Milwaukee said, nope, they got to have Kasperis to make this deal happen. So him, Khalil Ware, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Hero, 3 first-rounders, including this year's. So that would be the 13th pick in tonight's draft, 2030 and 2032, a pick swap, and a second-round pick in 2033 as well. Bobby Portis heading to Miami in that deal. So those are the official workings of that trade. Nothing really becomes official until July 6th, but that is the news. Giannis headed to Miami. The Portland Trailblazers not a part of it, and Boston not going to be getting Giannis either. That means that the Blazers' chances at getting Jaylen Brown probably going away. But on top of the Blazers not being involved in a trade yet, we have not heard about a head coach hire as well. So we will break into this best of coverage if the Blazers do make a move. Dirt and Sprague are hanging out down at Langdon Farms. Just a beautiful morning for the Fangolf Classic. Thank you once again to all of our listeners for selling it out. Morning and afternoon rounds all booked, but we are monitoring Blazers news, so we will let you know if anything happens. Continuing with this best of, though, of course, we are in the middle of the World Cup, and had a nice segment yesterday from the guys about the bandwagon that the United States fans are jumping on for this FIFA World Cup.
2 hours of the show has gone by, and we have not yet acknowledged the fact. Are you guys aware we are now a superpower in soccer?
I've heard this.
We are here.
Undefeated.
We are loud. We are proud.
Yes.
And we're not going anywhere.
Damn right.
USA played on Friday. Now, you and I were golfing in the middle of it, but we were checking.
We were keeping up.
Checking on the scores. And then I heard so many things about the atmosphere that it was one of those, like, let's go back and watch as much of this as we can.
Yes.
Because the atmosphere sounded terrific and everybody was raving about how loud it was. And then you go back and watch and you're like, oh my God, that's like seismic activity level crowd noise. The game day like atmosphere that they had before the game, where the fans are out doing the, you know, the
which is another good choice of just like kind of an Americanized thing that we like to do.
So the day goes great. We don't have our best player. We can get into that a little bit. And then we asked a question last week of all these other countries have chants and they have songs and they have, like, we don't really have a thing. We
Wonderwall
need a thing.
Is England's post-match thing. They sing win. Wonderwall.
And the whole crowd gets into it. And so we asked, what is our thing? Are we going to have a song? We came up with Party in the USA on Friday, and I don't think it was that bad of an idea, or Thursday it would have been. Not that bad of an idea. But then they won on Friday, and they told us, we've picked. I also love sing-alongs like that when you can tell the pockets of the song that not everybody knows
the
words.
100%.
And then when you get to the chorus.
West Virginia! I don't even know what they say after West Virginia.
It drowns
song,
out all of the other music. You can't even hear the song anymore. It's singing so loud. But before that, you could still hear it. Do we like the call of Country Roads? West Virginia's getting a lot of love here.
Well, I was going to say, I'm one jealous of Atlanta states. And West Virginia now today on a Monday. Like, who would have thought that was a thing? It's good. One of our P1s, Cody, was up at this and noted that, like, the Country Roads thing. And that may be it. I guess they also did Living on a Prayer. And they did it pretty well.
That's pretty good.
He said they did Living on a Prayer, and the stadium was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one to sing along to.
I just kept thinking, like, that's probably the choice.
It's a 90-degree day. You're hammered off your ass. You just smoked the Australians 2-0 in a dominant win without your best player. I'd be belting it out, too.
I did love the panic meter of everybody when they announced Pulisic wasn't going to play, and they're like, I don't know, man.
It's I don't know.
Really? We can't beat Australia.
Can we put into college football terms, because that's how I have to view this tournament, what is Australia in college football terms? Brandon, are you a soccer guy?
A little bit. Definitely around this time. I feel like it's where I watch the most soccer.
Do you have a gauge on Australia as a college football comp? Who did we dominate on Friday?
It has to be somebody that, like, the best thing they've done is made the Holiday Bowl.
I mean, are we talking like...
Maryland.
Maryland?
I think this is Maryland.
Is it Maryland?
I think Maryland's pretty bad, though.
What's
is that unfair to Australia or unfair to Maryland?
I think it's unfair to Australia.
So I think it's unfair to Maryland.
What has Australia done? Has Australia won the World Cup?
When we beat Paraguay in our first game, people told me that was Minnesota. We dominated Minnesota 4-1, which you feel good about a dominant win over Minnesota. They're rowing the boat. Like, all right, I'll take it. That's not the worst program, but it's not the best. You should dominate, and you did.
Okay, so this, the Google AI is, you know, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah. Are you asking it to compare
the Australian men's team has qualified for the FIFA World Cup finals on 7 occasions?
The final final?
They are ranked 25th in the world.
Okay, so it's
so
a
top 25 team.
Who's a back end? Who's a...
Maryland was kind of, weren't they?
I think that's, to his point, when was the last time Maryland was ranked in the top 25? I think
didn't they start like 7-0 and then they had no, but they played nobody?
I think it's
with
been
Tua's little brother?
I think it's been a hot minute. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm forgetting. Last year, your 25th ranked team was TCU, 9-4.
TCU was in a national championship, though. they lost 65-7.
How about Houston? They were 22nd. Does that count?
Yeah, Houston's a
good Houston?
Count.
Okay, so we dominated Houston?
Because I feel like Houston's had a couple versions where they've been like, oh, look at Houston. Ah, Ed Oliver.
Hey! Ed Oliver. That's a good pull. Ed Oliver was a stud there. It was like a random five-star that signed in a smaller conference.
Their
like,
best
what?
Results are round of 16 appearances in 06 and 2022 after a 32-year gap following their debut.
So maybe Houston is there, right? Like, Andre Ware won the Heisman there years ago,
yeah,
and they kind of disappeared, and then they've been more relevant as of late. So maybe Houston's a good comp.
Maybe Houston is a good comp.
Yeah, I mean, the thought was going into the game, we don't have our best player, so how does this look?
But who are we then? How are we to equate what we are?
I mean, we've already
right
won
now.
The group. We're already. Have you seen our pathway, by the way?
It's kind of lining up nice.
Are we? Am I putting the cart in front of the horse here?
I mean, probably.
Or are USA soccer fans with me of looking at this? Like, again, I don't watch this stuff. I don't even know that much about it. I just saw the teams that were projected to play in every round and thought, how do we not do? How do we not win?
But do you think.
And not to win the whole thing, but win those games that are projected.
Well, I guess that's what I would ask as the follow up is how far do we think we can get now?
I mean, it'd be massive, dude. Like, this is.
No. Like, what's the expectation?
I think the expectation is at least to the round of 16.
Yeah.
Anything short of that would feel like a disappointment.
Round of 16, I would say, is our best case, worst case scenario. Anything better than that, I would think, is a success. Anything
yes.
worse
so the floor
than that
is the round of 16?
Yes.
The ceiling is?
The final.
You think we can get to the final? Do you think we can?
Seeing that pathway, anything can happen. It's soccer.
So
soccer's weird.
Soccer
anything
is
can
weird.
And I also
did the
think-
men finally figure it out?
Well, I also think the other part of this that is not getting – so right now our round of 32 opponent – now, I don't, these aren't set. This is a possible pathway, right? We don't know for certain yet. We got to wait and see. Ecuador in the round of 32.
Yep.
Should win that.
New Zealand or Czechia in the round of 16.
Should win that. New Zealand didn't look impressive yesterday.
Right? And then in the quarters, playing either the Congo, Ghana, Uruguay, or Austria.
I couldn't tell you anything.
Neither could I.
I don't
probably
know.
Win that too. Uruguay, they can get hot. I mean, they weren't that impressive yesterday either. I mean, Cape Verde tying them.
Yeah, I saw that they tied.
Well, Belgium tied with Iran. I don't know how to gauge some of this stuff.
Yeah
it's
really tough.
There's been some wonky results early. There's no doubt about it.
Like, how much us not having to really travel? Like,
well,
we're
that's a big part.
Inside,
I mean, the other idea of this is like, dude, that atmosphere on Friday was one of the best sporting atmospheres that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
That was insane.
Yep.
When they had the announcement of was the goal good or not, and you're waiting for the ref to come out and give the confirmation that it's a good goal, the crowd pop after he announced that was insane.
It's hard to beat a crowd pop at a World Cup.
And
you're
I just
talking
think,
about 80 to 100,000.
Especially with the home team.
And it's the home team in that stadium, too, which is built for sound.
Which is also why I think the ceiling is the final, because you have that home support.
Wow.
Yes, and that's
that
the whole thing.
Question.
Like, I just, having your country behind you to this level, you never know. Like, one of my biggest frustrations, I think, in modern life with sports is the idea that we have to politicize everything.
Yeah.
When the USA basketball beat France, when was that? When was the last Summer Olympics? 4 years ago? 2-3 years ago? Whenever it was. When we beat France and Wemby in Paris, and that was a great game, and Steph hits the game winner. You immediately get a chunk of the country that's like rooting for the team to lose, and I just think that's dumb loser behavior. Who cares about their politics? You're an American, root for the American team.
Yes.
And then in the hockey side of it, you get the director of the FBI pounding beers with the hockey team.
I know, it goes the other way.
And a controversial call from the president making fun of the women's team who also won a gold medal. And then all of a sudden, half the country is pissed that the hockey team won, and now they shouldn't. It's just, I hate that we're doing that every time now. It becomes a political. Game of football where you're going back and forth. And I hope that this one's different. I don't know if it will be, but it does genuinely seem to be like, oh my God, we're not only are we hosting, we dominated our first game scoring right away, and I think that woke everybody up of like, that's, we gave the stats after their first game of, we've never done that before. Like, having a guy with multiple goals in a game, winning a game by three goals, like, we just, that does not happen for the USA in the history of their run in World Cups. And then we back it up without our best player. And sure, Australia is not the stiffest of competition, but that game was never really in doubt. They scored early. They led the entire game. You get a shutout. There's no Pulisic, so he's hopefully going to be back next Friday. I just, there seems to be a real wave of momentum right now. Mm-hmm. And if you are to, they've already won their group. If you come out and look good in your next couple of matches and that momentum continues to build, it's just fun, man. I, you know, we've joked a lot on the show over the years about the idea of soccer becoming the American sport. And that's been kind of a thing our entire life of wait until, you know, and by the time we're 10 years from now, soccer will be the most popular sport. I just don't think that'll ever happen. We're a football country. We'll always be a football country, the American version of it. But it doesn't mean in these little moments and pockets that you can't have a super wide tent and bring everybody in, because the World Cup's a massive deal. The atmospheres have been great. And that was fun, man. They have fully got me on board of watching how far this thing's going to go and being psyched to see whenever the next game is, which is, I believe, next Friday, if I'm not wrong.
Poll questions up. Do you believe the ceiling for the U.S. men's World Cup team is the final? Yes, I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
Or no. You can vote at Dirt and Sprague. I'm with you. I mean, I think everything you said right there is spot on. I've also, like, aside from having crowd pops and winning and figuring out our country's sing-alongs, I have found myself really enjoying. Like, I saw, I've seen people write about, you know, you talk about, like, everything political, kind of making counterculture arguments against, like, all these other people from other countries and reveling in the cool things about America or the funny things about America, like Taco Bell.
Yeah. Do you see, by the way, that they had to put out a statement from the TSA saying you can't put ranch in your carry-on? People kept trying to take ranch, Hidden Valley Ranch home. And they, so then Hidden Valley Ranch came up with the packet that you can take home,
like a
powder version that you mix together and make ranch dressing, because people kept trying to put it on the plane.
That's what we buy.
That's what you guys do.
We buy the powder one, so you just mix it in.
Oh.
Super easy. Mix it with a little Greek yogurt.
Hey.
But I've really enjoyed seeing the reaction. Like, did you see the fans get into Times Square for Norway?
Yes, I did.
Did you see the Viking row?
Yes, it was awesome.
That's insane.
It was so cool.
It looked AI'd.
It did.
That's how, like, unbelievable some of the stuff looks.
All right, we got it. In the middle of this best of segment, breaking news in just the last few minutes, according to ESPN's Shams Charania, the Portland Trailblazers hiring Minnesota Timberwolves lead assistant Mike Nori to be their next head coach. He gets a multi-year deal. Of course, Nori has been an assistant around the NBA since 2009. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to finish up this hour with our final Best of Soccer segment. And then at the top of the hour, come 9 a.m., Dirt and Spray are going to join us live down at Langdon Farms from the Fan Golf Classic to break down this huge hire by the Portland Trailblazers. And hey, no longer is a possible felon our head coach right now. Chauncey was still officially our head coach, just so you know, until this happened. So Mike Nori, now the Blazers head coach. We will get some reaction from Dirt and Sprague here at the top of the hour. But big news on the day of the NBA draft for you Portland Trailblazers fans, it's going to be Mike Nori on the sidelines. We'll get back to our best of edition of Dirt and Sprague, and then we'll check in with them live down at Langdon Farms here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Best of edition of Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network, and we did get some breaking news on this Tuesday here at 105.1 The Fan. The Portland Trailblazers have their guy, according to ESPN's Shams Charania. Blazers are hiring Minnesota Timberwolves lead assistant Mike Nori to be their next head coach. He gets a multi-year deal. Nori has been as an assistant in the NBA since 2009, and we're going to bring Dirt and Sprague on live here in about 8 or 9 minutes or so from Langdon Farms to break it all down, but we'll finish up the hour with our planned soccer best of segment. But breaking news, yes, the Blazers have made a head coaching hire. It's going to be Mike Nori, one of the finalists that has been thrown around for some time now. So congrats to you Blazers fans. Hope you're excited. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of time with all of our hosts today, despite them being down at Langdon Farms to break it down. But yeah, let's finish up this hour with a nice bit of World Cup talk before we get to Dirt and Sprague breaking down the Mike Nori hire.
I've also enjoyed some of the storylines. So it was a joke, but it made the headlines. Did you see what Iraq plays today?
Mm-hmm.
And they play Kylian Mbappe. They play France. They're surely going to lose.
Not likely to win.
Did you see what the coach said when he was asked, how do you stop Kylian Mbappe?
I didn't know. What was his quote?
He said, we're actually writing to the officials right now to see if we can legally get okayed for three goalkeepers.
Ooh, I like that strategy.
And I did think, it won't happen. He was joking.
Let him play with three. Could they win?
Could they push or win if they had three? They can't win. If you have three goalkeepers, you can't win. Can you have a 0-0 tie?
You could tie.
Would you bet on Iraq to tie France if they
just
had
three
goalkeepers?
Guys planted, yes, in front of the net the entire,
yes,
game? Yeah, you would be able
and
to stop.
Also,
you just have your one little box that you got to defend.
Dumb soccer question. Yeah. Why can't you be allowed if you give up having a striker?
Well, you can stand guys back there. They just can't touch it and they can't catch it.
But
you
I'm saying, like, if they okayed it.
Put your body in the way.
I mean, like, could you imagine the Stanley Cup allowing two goals?
Two goals next to each other.
No, it was my side.
No, you move over. Move over, dude. It's like you and your wife in bed when she rolls over too far to your side. Get out of here. What are you doing?
You're up. I'm down. You're up. I'm down.
You're breathing on my pillow? Like, come on, man. Roll over.
It would be really badass. They're +5 goal differential. They have 6 points. Like,
yes,
they've handled their business and they look good. They do. They're
that's
looking
the
all,
part of
every
it.
Bit the part that everybody thought potentially they could be. Now, yeah. I still don't know how we gauge the group. Do we think this group is very good? I don't know. But they've handled their business. And in the past, they have choked on this stage.
Yes. I mean, that's exactly right. And somebody said, that's a good point from one of our P1s, Australia might not be a great team, but good teams crap on bad teams.
Yes.
Like, that's what you're supposed to do. And they didn't have their best player. And so you came out and dominated the game. You did exactly what you were supposed to do. I also think there's an element of this that is true. One listener saying, it's easier to come together and get behind a sport like soccer or hockey because we're not expected to dominate. Winning in basketball has gotten boring and expected, much like the Soviet Union winning in hockey during the 60s and 70s. And I certainly think there's an aspect of that. Like, how many sports? Well,
that's not the case in hoops anymore. We barely won.
Now it's come the full circle way, right? Where the international game has gotten so good.
But I hope we medal in the next Olympics.
But I think the point of that is, like, us not winning a gold medal is one of the most shocking things that has happened to American basketball in my lifetime.
The 04 season.
And then we had a redeem team. It's like, wait, we're not the best at basketball anymore? Now, to your point, it's changed now and evolved. The game has.
Yeah.
But, like, I think to that listener's point, which is a good one, a rallying cry of an underdog will be the Kevin Durant in this segment. How many sports left exist that we are an underdog in? Almost every Olympic sport.
Honestly, it might only be men's soccer.
Yeah, because hockey's not. I can't say hockey an underdog anymore.
We
like, we're
won.
Certainly not Canada, but we have been in, Olympic gold medal games, and we've claimed close.
We were a favorite to be in the final.
Yes.
Canada was the overall favorite. We were the second favorite the entire time.
I don't, like, we just hadn't won a gold medal in a long time, but that doesn't mean we're an underdog. We were an underdog against Canada.
I don't think we're going to be the betting favorite in 28 for the Summer Olympics, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be France.
For basketball?
Yeah, I think it's going to be France for men's basketball.
That one will take a while, I think, to build up the underdog mentality. Again, and for all we know, we might still go on to win the Olympics that year just because you're a slight underdog. Again, as they were in hockey, doesn't mean that you can't win it. Soccer, we're a true underdog. Like, nobody gave us a chance in hell to win this thing.
See,
and I still think it's a far-fetched idea that we're actually going to win the World Cup. We got a long ways to go until we get there.
Yeah.
But I do think the listener's point is valid of, it's not a sport that we just dominate every 2 years or every 4 years and say, see you later, rest of the world. We've largely been the laughing stock. And so to come together and watch a team maybe break through and not be that.
Have we? Okay, so somebody, one of our listeners, and this is why I appreciate being honest with everybody of, like, what I don't know, which is mostly everything about these countries. Like, I've just followed the Premier League. One of our listeners, Grant, says 2009 U.S. men were capable of beating Spain. This team is capable of beating anyone in the cup, which is a good perspective to have, I think, because we put the poll question up. Do you believe the ceiling for them is the final? And a lot of people are saying no so far, but you're free to vote wherever you want. I got one counter to you.
Okay, what's the counter?
And I ask this from a stupid, uneducated perspective. Sprinting? Are we an underdog in sprinting? Or did we... I forget what we did in 24.
I couldn't tell you either. We obviously weren't beating Usain Bolt there for a while.
There was a minute there where we were not beating that team.
But I also feel like saying, again, that's that
but
to me is the hockey
so
comp. It's not like we're an underdog.
Yeah, we might
not be the favorite, but an American being a good sprinter is not like, wait, where did that come from? We've dominated that sport for a long
time.
So
then I think it's soccer, then.
I think this is the only one.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And maybe there's a listener that would chime in on something else. Like, don't go too off the beaten path on me.
Yeah, Noah Lyles won.
Noah Lyles did,
yeah. Noah Lyles.
That's
touché.
Right. The whole world championship thing of, you're not the world champion, I'm the world champion. Remember he picked a fight with everybody?
Yeah. But there was a minute there where we weren't.
Yeah, don't give me like the cross-country skiing and shooting thing that the Norwegians or Scandinavians, like that doesn't count.
I think you're right. I think it is men's soccer.
Yeah, they're not necessarily
sticking out of my mind. We've reigned supreme in others. Even if we've taken a backseat momentarily, we've come back to the forefront.
Yep.
To the track point. I think it's U.S. men's soccer.
I just, man, it is, I didn't know how I was going to react to all this. Once the soccer actually began, I was excited for it of like, hey, it's kind of fun. The atmospheres look solid.
Dude, I was watching Tunisia and Japan.
It's like every day,
Friday,
dude.
Right?
I'm watching it every day. Every day I'm getting home like, okay, they're playing right now. All right. Might as well have it on in the background. Nothing else on. NBA finals are done filling my holes, so soccer might as well
I think
do
the
it.
Best thing is also not having an understanding of how to gauge. Like, is Belgium supposed to dominate
totally
Iran or is a 0-0 full-time draw?
Right.
Is that, like, shocking?
Portugal and Cape Verde is one that I know was a shocking outcome. Anything else than that, I'm like, that seems like a maybe.
You mean Uruguay?
Uruguay. Well, they tied Uruguay,
yeah,
too.
They tied Uruguay.
But wasn't the first one against the Ronaldo game? Or was it Spain? Or they drew
with
Spain. Spain, thank you.
Because
okay.
you live bet Cape Verde
live
to win.
We're like, eh,
but if you would have taken them to draw.
Would have been a nice little payout.
Would have been a nice payout.
Well, I got soccer fever. You got soccer fever. Do we agree with Country Roads, Take Me Home? John Denver is the American song after a win.
I'll put up Living on a Prayer or Country Roads.
Certainly sounded great up in Seattle. Jealous. Our buddy Tyson Aldridge was up there. I saw he was doing some stuff. So
yeah.
A lot of people went up for the match. And man, did it deliver. Great atmosphere up in Seattle on Friday.
All right, when we come back, Dirt and Sprague live from Langdon Farms to break down the newest head coach of the Portland Trail Blazers. It's lead assistant Micah Nori that will be roaming the sidelines. That's coming up next. You're on the other side of the top of the hour on Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan of the Fan Sports Network.